Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hello, folks, and welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Market and Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Market and Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, residential, commercial, land. Joe's been covering all that for 23 years. Joe Henry is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe at 515-208-7312. Hey, a quick shout out to the Des Moines Irish Session for our wonderful bumper music. I would like to welcome to the program Maria Reves. She's a small business owner, a yoga instructor, a former physician, and she has deep ties to Gaza. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, you've been going to Gaza since 2016.
Yes.
And what was your initial reason for being interested in that trip?
I've always been interested in the Palestine issue. And then I just had friends in college who were Palestinian and learned more about it from them. And I've always cared about injustice. And I pay attention to world events, and I always saw the injustice happening there. And my concern just grew, you know, after Rachel Corrie was murdered there.
Rachel Corrie, for people who might not be familiar, Rachel Corrie was a young American activist who was run over by an Israeli tank.
Yes, a bulldozer.
A bulldozer, back in the 1990s,
I believe,
maybe?
2003. In Rafah, which is southern Gaza. I've been to this place where she was killed.
And now you're part Lebanese, correct?
Yes, I am.
Your father was Lebanese, I believe?
Yes, he was. Yeah. My grandfather was from Lebanon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So part of your interest is your own
cultural
background, yeah. But so you've been there 5 times since 2016.
Yes.
And I believe you said your last trip was supposed to happen immediately before the October 7th terrorist attack.
I was supposed to be there during October 7th.
Yeah.
My birthday is October 11th, and I was delighted I was going to be spending my birthday there in 2023, my 51st. 52nd?
Because you become very close
52nd
with...
52nd birthday.
You know, I wasn't trying to get you to reveal your age on the air, but now that it's out, okay.
I get to spend my birthday there.
My Irish grandmother said a woman who will tell you her age will tell you anything. So.
Oh, really?
She was a bizarre woman. Anyway. So the last trip, you said, though, was canceled for some reason.
It wasn't canceled. We just never received word from Israel that we were given permission to enter.
So here's a question. Why would Israel even want somebody like you going into Gaza?
I mean, that's just Israel, they never wanted anybody to go
right,
in.
But they kind of control the flow of outsiders into Gaza.
Israel has, since 2006 or 7, controlled 100% of everything.
So how are you able to...
In air, sea, and land in Gaza. People, goods, everything.
Food, as we notice. Yeah. So how were you able to get in 5 times?
With an organization here of medical professionals. This woman, Jerry, who leads the trips, she's been going for 25, 30 years, something like that. She has deep ties, and she's a medical professional. And so she knew how to the process of going through the hoops to gain permission, because you had to get permission from Hamas, Jordan, the country of Jordan, and then
why
Israel.
Jordan?
Because of control. I don't remember exactly historical control with PA and PLO, whatever. And Hamas and Jordan always gave permission. It was Israel who would let almost nobody in, very few people.
So, it's amazing that you got to go there not just once, but five times.
Five times, correct.
Yeah. And you have people who you are very, very close to. You call them family.
I do. In Gaza, and then some of them are now in Cairo.
So some Gazans have fled the country just in order to not... I mean so many people have been killed.
There was a time during the genocide until May of 2024 where if you paid, it was either anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 per person, you could get them across the border into Cairo. So that's where all these GoFundMes started, was desperately raising money to get people out. And that's how I helped get some people out. And the main head of the household of my family in Gaza was supposed to leave. His wife had paid the full amount. And the day before he was going to leave, that was when the closings were shut down completely.
Mm-hmm. So Egypt is not allowing any Palestinians into Egypt right now.
Right, but during the war in June, when Iran was bombing Israel, they let Israelis pass for like almost nothing into the border, into Egypt. But they won't let Palestinians.
On one of your trips there, maybe first an explanation for our audience about the what's called the Great March of Return. What is the Great March of Return?
What was it?
It was
a nonviolent, peaceful march along the borders that took place in Gaza in 2018 and mid 2018 to mid 2019. It was about a year, a little over long. Every Friday after prayer, they would go to the border fence and
Fence between Gaza and Israel.
Right, right. Not all the way to the border because that's way too dangerous, but close up to it, and they would peacefully say, "We have a right to return." You know, peacefully resist their occupation.
Return to
their lands.
Okay.
Return because they, under international law, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Refugees have a right to return, and occupied people have a right to resist their occupiers. That's basic international law, which means nothing nowadays. International law, but
so the this would go on every day.
No, every Friday.
Every Friday, sorry. And you were there for this Great March to Return once.
I was so lucky I got to see one in the end of October 2018.
What was that like?
It was incredible. It was led by women, and it was like a festival-type atmosphere. It was peaceful. All the women were standing in their thobes, which is their traditional Palestinian dress with their hijabs, like on a berm or just like in a row, with a bullhorn, leading the chants and leading the songs and the prayers and stuff. And then there were other Palestinians playing music and others dancing dabki, which is traditional Palestinian folk dance. And they were just, it was so peaceful and incredible and amazing. But
how many people were participating?
Thousands.
Thousands, really?
And I wasn't supposed to go, but I decided that moment I was going to ask for forgiveness rather than ask for permission.
So
because Jerry found out later because I posted it on Facebook and she got so angry at me.
Jerry.
And I said, Jerry was the one who organized our trips from
the
U.S.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
From the U.S.,
yes,
yeah.
Okay.
So she was upset and then I just said, I had to go. I'm here during it. I can't, you know.
Yeah. And so these Friday marches.
Uh-huh.
Very festive, very colorful, totally peaceful, never any violence.
Well, occasionally there was some, you know, where some protesters would try to send an incendiary balloon over with like a Molotov cocktail on it. But the majority of the people were peaceful.
Toward Israel.
Right, right. But it's into an open field. Okay.
Okay. Still not a great idea.
But they have a right.
Sure. And so did Israel ever respond violently against the
Every single time they had a march, yes.
And what form did the violence take?
not long after I left watching it, two Palestinians were killed, sniped by Israeli soldiers, and several others were injured. They used to have contests, the Israeli soldiers, about how many kneecaps they could get in a day. Or how many testicles?
How do we know that?
Because soldiers have said it. It's soldiers their own have soldiers of
IDF soldiers.
IOF soldiers, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that night, Israel dropped 110 missiles on us in the span of less than 12 hours.
So you were bombed.
We were bombed, and so our work was canceled the next day.
Were the people killed during that bombing?
A few. I don't remember how many.
How did you manage to? Did you
hide? It was scary.
There's no basements, I'm guessing.
No, it was just scary. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And so, why did the Great March of Return stop? Was it just because?
Because people were getting
dangerous?
Murdered.
Yeah. Okay. And again.
It wasn't working, but they tried.
And you mentioned your Palestinian family. Mm-hmm. Were they involved with those marches as well?
No. No. It was too dangerous.
Yeah. Okay.
One of them would report on it because he's a journalist.
Mm-hmm. So you told me a story earlier about a man you tried to help with who had a child with a really serious medical need,
and you
tried to do what you could to help, and that
it was a baby, a boy. Was he one and a half? My family in Gaza. He's a journalist, and he's one people reach out to for help. He had been called and they said this father, you know, this baby needs some things. And so I went to the apartment with him and I held this dying baby and he could hear me. And I just sang to him and held him, and he had a brain malformation, which they knew he was going to die. But I walked into the apartment and there were like two dirty cushions, a dirty baby blanket, and then the fridge was empty except for one bottle of medicine for the baby, which was almost gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing to feed the baby, no other furniture.
Was the condition that the baby suffered from something that could have been addressed had there been
adequate
medical care?
No, it was a Dandy Walker malformation, I remember now. But he just wasn't, there was no comfort for him, so he was just dying.
Mm-hmm. Without exposing too much, because I assume there's got to be some level of protection for the people you know back there, but without exposing too much, to tell us a little more about your family in Gaza.
Well, my son Saeed, I'm going to say his name. He's in Cairo. He's 19. I'm trying to get him here. He's an angel. He's not really my son, but he's got a wonderful mother, the best mother in the world. But I couldn't love him more if he were my son, which is why I call him my son. I helped get him out of Gaza, and he's a light. He has two other brothers. They're wonderful. He's the youngest, and then his mother is wonderful, and his grandmother lives with them now in Cairo, and some of them are still in Gaza, but... it's really heavy.
Would you say the Egyptian government is treating your Palestinian family in Cairo?
No, that's the thing. Palestinian refugees are not allowed visas in Egypt.
So where do they live?
Good question.
Okay.
If you're a refugee from any other country in the world and you go to Egypt, you can get a visa, a refugee visa. But if you're Palestinian, you can't. If you don't have a visa, that means you can't work. It's hard to get medical care. You can't go to school. You can't rent an apartment. You can't pick up money from the money store.
Is that another word for bank?
No, like a Western Union.
Okay.
Or a bank. Yeah, a bank too. Any kind of place where you would pick up money, because they need to pick up money to live.
So how do they... I mean, I heard there were, what, 100,000 or so?
Approximately. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, and it sounds like even in Egypt, they're very much second-class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But are they in refugee camps, or where are they living? How are they getting by?
One thing I learned after my very first time to Palestine was that everything is difficult if you're Palestinian, and it kind of translates universally. So, you know... Some of them have family or friends who have already gotten out, who are there, who have been established.
In Egypt.
In Egypt. Some of them have family and friends from overseas who send money to Egypt. Some Egyptian people help. The Egyptian government, you know, is too under the wing of the U.S. and Israeli, you know, influence. But the people of Egypt, like the people of the United States, want to help and want to do the right thing.
Hmm.
Generally.
Yeah. But as tough as it might be to be a Palestinian trying to survive in Cairo, I imagine that's preferable to trying to be a Palestinian and surviving in what's left of Gaza.
Exactly. It is.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have connections with any of those left in Gaza?
Yes.
Yeah, I imagine every family there has had someone or multiple members of their family killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to take a short break, folks. Talking with Maria Reves today about her experience in Gaza. And when we come back, I want to switch gears, kind of move forward into the future, talk about what happened on October 7th and what's continued to transpire since then. This is Ed Fallon, your host on the Fallon Forum, with my guest again, Maria Reves, back in a moment after a couple of mentions of our supporters, back in a moment on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks again to our sponsors and partners, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Thanks also to the Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, on the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. All right, welcome back to the program. And again, my guest today, Maria Reves. We were discussing Gaza. She's got a long-time connection to the country. And we were discussing her multiple trips to Palestine, to Gaza, since 2016. Coincidentally, was planning to be there on October 7th, which also was around the time of her birthday, October 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And then that trip got canceled. But we all know what's happened since then, although, of course, you get a different story if you want to listen to Benjamin Netanyahu's take on it. But October 7th, again, regarded as the point at which the Israeli government said, okay, we've had enough. We're going to take out Hamas and do whatever we have to do to take, you know, we're going to do whatever we have to do to destroy Hamas. What's your take on that rationale?
The moment October 7th happened, I fell to my knees and I couldn't breathe because I knew in my bones what awaited my brothers and sisters in Gaza. Just once you go there, you see how delicate, how completely occupied they are. But I never thought the U.S. would let it go this far.
Now, one response I usually get from people who are very pro-Israel is, well, do you have equal concern for the Israelis who were killed, for the Israelis who were taken hostage? I mean, what are your thoughts on
that? Of course, they're all humans. That's a silly question.
Yeah.
Of course. The thing is, so many myths abound about October 7th. And I would direct anybody who wants to learn more to the electronicintifada.net.
Electronicintifada.net.
And these journalists I've been reading them and supporting them for decades, and two decades. And they've done the most, they have a live stream every Thursday where they break down what's been happening. It starts at 11 a.m. here in our time zone. There were reports by Israelis' own soldiers, mainly women, who were stationed around the perimeter of Gaza. It's called the Gaza Envelope, who were reporting leading up to October 7th that there were drills for an imminent attack, et cetera, et cetera. October 7th, and the Israeli military higher-ups disregarded it. Since then, last I heard, all of those women, soldiers, have been killed except for one in Gaza, in battle. Yeah.
Huh.
That was a few months ago when I heard that. So they knew it was going to happen. They called all of their military forces, especially the Air Force, away for 7 hours on that day. Okay? I think we need to push back on the myths of what happened that day, what really happened, because most of the people who were killed, the civilians who were killed, Israeli civilians who were killed on October 7th, most of them were killed by the Hannibal Directive.
What's that mean?
It's when Israel kills its own. Oh. Instead of allowing the enemy to take hostages, they kill the hostages so nobody could go. So they were ordering the Hannibal Directive, ordering them to shoot at all vehicles going back to Gaza. And that's what they did. In the kibbutzes, that's also. You see how a lot of these civilians died from Israel on October 7th? They died in ways that from military ammunition that Hamas did not have. They had machine guns and RPGs.
And is that,
these were killed. This is confirmed.
And that's verifiable.
And the Israeli military has confirmed that they ordered the Hannibal Directive en masse on October 7th. They've come out and confirmed it since then.
So why does that not get more play in the mainstream media?
I don't know. Because the mainstream media is not interested in the truth. They're interested in propaganda.
And why would they?
Can they even be called journalists anymore?
Depends who you ask. So the whole premise behind October 7th is flawed.
Was a false flag.
Yeah.
So they could go on and invade Gaza.
Yeah.
And take it over.
And so Zionists, and again, not all Israelis are Zionists, but right now I would say we have probably the most Zionist ruler of Israel that there ever has been, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But Zionism predates the 1948 establishment of the state of
Certainly.
Israel. And my understanding is, and I welcome my Jewish friends for, if you want to clarify this for me, although I think many of them would totally agree, that there has been an objective all along to reclaim what are seen as the ancestral lands of the Israelis, and that would include Gaza, that would include the West Bank, that would include the Golan Heights. And this seems to be another dramatic step toward accomplishing that goal. Regardless of whether October 7th was a false flag or not, what they're doing is accomplishing the objective of purging the Gaza Strip of Palestinians. And right now with Israel's recent decision to, how did Netanyahu put it?
Occupy Gaza.
Yeah, they're going to occupy what's left of it. But what does that mean in terms of the Palestinian people there? Are they going to
be
expelled?
They want to get rid of them or kill them.
Yeah. I mean, all the while this is going on, and correct me if you see it differently, but in the West Bank, with the government, the Israeli government turning a blind eye to settler hostilities, Israeli settlers are just kind of going in and appropriating land from Palestinian families, basically creating a, you know, if the West Bank is considered Palestinian territory, it is Palestinian territory absolutely pockmarked with Jewish settlements now.
It's a Bantustan type ghetto situation.
It's a, sorry, say that again?
Bantustan ghetto type situation.
I don't know what that means.
Harken back to South Africa apartheid.
Bantustan. Oh, Bantu, got it.
Bantustan.
Okay. That
it's even worse. The apartheid in Palestine is in Israel is worse than what it was in South Africa, and that was what Nelson Mandela even said a long time ago.
So they are pushing toward this concept of this realization of a large, I mean, but
well, they want Greater Israel, which is not just historic Palestine. Greater Israel includes Lebanon, parts of Syria, parts of Iraq, parts of Egypt. Like, they wear that on their military uniform, the map of Greater Israel. And Israel has never defined its borders. Mm-hmm. They've always refused to, because they want Greater Israel, which includes getting rid of Arabs mm-hmm. in that area, in an Arab region of mm-hmm. the world.
Mm-hmm. So how, I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you weren't surprised that the U.S. government under Joe Biden and again under Donald Trump, you know, basically facilitated the expansion of Israel's war against the Palestinians. And but you did say that you were surprised that they've allowed it to go on this long and this far. If I understood you correctly.
Because that's the way it's been with our politics. If you look back on the wars, like the 2008-09 war on Gaza, 2014 war on Gaza, 2021 war on Gaza, like they were all pretty self-limited with devastating losses and destruction, but then they would stop. So I always thought, okay, this is another one. We're going to, you know, they're going to do this and mow the lawn and all these gross things.
Mow the lawn. Explain that to me.
That's an Israeli military strategy that they use where they don't let Gaza develop too much. And if they see too much development, they mow the lawn, mow it with bombs.
Destroy buildings.
Destroy it.
Well, and that's kind of what's going on in the West Bank as well.
Yeah.
Destroying villages and
destroying everything to take it over.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do, fulfill their prophecy, but how is that right? That's not right.
But I would, my impression is, I mean, I've got deep roots in the Jewish tradition. That was my focus as a student at Drake University. I learned to read Hebrew. I read the Bible in Hebrew.
Right.
You know, and I've been to Israel. I've stayed on a kibbutz that I have great respect for, the culture, the religion, the music, and most of the people I know. I mean, I in Iowa, in Des Moines, I've been to the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform synagogues, and most of the Conservative and Reform Jews I know are very liberal-minded people who have deep concerns about where this is going. But I'm just surprised that it's that there's a strong enough contingent of Zionist Jews within the Israeli community that are able to allow this to happen. What am I missing?
First of all, it's unfortunate that Zionism is too intertwined with Judaism. There are plenty of anti-Zionist Jews in our country and in this world who are speaking out against mm-hmm. this.
Yes, we've known that.
But it is, you know, and I think it's imperative for me as an American, someone who pays taxes to have help this happen in the belly of the beast. It is up to me to be loud and do everything in my power to do it. It is also up to every Jewish American to be loud, just as loud as me, if not louder, so their religion is not hijacked. Okay, Zionism has proven materially to be fascism, to be the new Nazism. Mm. So don't equate it with Judaism. Why?
Okay.
I mean, that's, And that's not my job. My job is to tend to those who are suffering and those who are being murdered and killed and those who are left standing. So I don't even want to get into that debate because it's so ridiculous at this moment.
So what, you know, if, again, you mentioned being surprised that the U.S. has allowed this to go so far, and with a majority of Americans now agreeing that what's happening in Gaza is wrong, agreeing that what's happening is genocide.
And a Holocaust.
Yeah.
Fits all definitions.
Yeah, and who agree? I mean, 83% of Democratic voters agree this is a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Why are more Democratic politicians not willing to stand up and say genocide? I mean,
You know what? I have gone through, I have so much rage inside of me. Okay, so I'm less angry at the Republican Party because I never expected anything from them. In fact, I'm a little slightly optimistic with what I hear from certain Republicans who are speaking out against this.
Such as?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I think that took people by surprise.
Like Malcolm X said, I don't care. I'm not going to say it the way Malcolm X said it, but I'm for truth no matter who speaks it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and she's speaking truth.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I support everything she says, but oh dear Lord, I support that. And I support her when she says that because it is the truth. I can't believe there are so many genocide deniers right now. I have felt so personally betrayed by the Democratic Party. You saw how active I was, how I went to every presidential candidate all the time talking about Gaza, giving pictures of it, giving my writings, how many articles I submitted, how many presentations I've talked about it, how many Democratic candidates I've hosted at my venue, let them have functions for free or almost free. That's so over.
Are there any Democrats that you feel are speaking truthfully about this right now?
Rashida Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib, who is Palestinian?
Mm-hmm.
What about Bernie Sanders?
I don't even listen to them anymore. I can't. I don't have time. Bernie does, even as of a few days ago, won't call it a genocide. I had so much hope in him before. I've lost hope in him. It's the whole establishment is broken and corrupt.
Hmm. Do we? My take is that one reason that Kamala Harris lost the last election was because there were so many people who were offended by Biden's policy in Gaza that they stayed home or voted third party or voted for Trump. And I think that's actually pretty verifiable in some of the swing states.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't I mean?
If voting mattered, they wouldn't. They would take it away from us. I don't think voting matters anymore.
Well, I would disagree with that pretty strongly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for you. But we're going to disagree.
Okay.
I think the whole system's broken, and I don't know what to do.
Well, I think there's a very, very powerful force on the it's a bipartisan force, but it's particularly influential in the Democratic universe, and that's AIPAC, the American Israeli.
It's not political action committee.
Not quite. It's very similar
something
to that.
Something like
though.
That. Yeah.
But they are. They have actually, run candidates against progressive Democrats who were pro-peace, even Jewish members of Congress.
I know, yeah.
And they have often won. They beat Cori Bush. They beat Bowman. They beat what was the fellow's name from Michigan? The Jewish congressman from. They run again. I mean, that kind of adds evidence to your point that Zionism and Judaism are two different things.
Right.
Yeah, because they are pro-Zionist.
Right.
And they run against Jewish candidates they have to.
Well, there are more Christian Zionists in the U.S. than there are Jewish Zionists.
See the end of times
right,
and the
right,
rapture.
Right.
And yeah.
But I think that's all changing. In the meantime, we're losing millions of people to a genocide.
Yeah. So what can we do to embolden candidates, Democrat and Republican?
I don't give a damn what any politician. I don't give a damn. Stop the genocide. Just stop it.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to talk about voting.
Okay.
I don't want to talk with anybody, anywhere.
I get that. But at some point, are we going to have a U.S. Congress that has the, let me just say, the courage of Marjorie Taylor Greene to stand up and say, we're not going to fund the genocide
What's
anymore?
What's the other gentleman's name? Massey is the last name. He's the one saying that they should...
A Republican?
Republican.
Yeah, I know what you mean,
Thomas Massey.
I
mean, I don't... Just stop the genocide. I don't have any advice or any optimism for our political future here in this country. stop the genocide. Just stop. That's all I can think about every day.
Well, we're going to take a short break. I want to talk more with you about what the future looks like potentially, because even if the U.S. Congress isn't showing any momentum, there is momentum globally. I want to talk about that with you. Okay. Folks, Maria Reves is my guest today on the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon, your host, and we'll be back in a minute after a very short break.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, with me in the studio today, Marie Reves. So we were discussing Gaza. And Maria's connections there go back far and deep, and she's... As you've been listening to the program, you know, it's a very difficult conversation for her. It's probably a difficult conversation for a lot of us, given the scope of what's going on and the U.S. government's complicity in it. You know, Marie, I'd like to suggest that maybe there is ultimately a positive outcome to what's happening. I mean, we see a global movement right now of support for the Palestinian people. More and more countries are saying, you know, we recognize Palestine. We are calling this a genocide. I mean, countries and, you know, important global leaders like Pope Leo. I mean, we're seeing more and more of that happening. And we're seeing more and more dissent within Israel. That's my impression. So what do you think? Are we seeing the beginning of a change in...
It has to come from outside. It can't be within.
Within the U.S., you mean? Or within,
no,
within Israel?
It has to come, not from within. It's not going to come within Israel. 82% of Israelis, Jewish Israelis, agree with the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. And like something like 60-some percent of them are okay with, if that means killing them.
And is that because of the propaganda that's kind of controlled
by... That's the propaganda that they're born and raised in.
Right.
The answer is what, you know, every from my first time there, I would ask Palestinians, so what's the solution? And they would all smile and just say, it's simple. Give us equal rights. Call it Israel, but give us equal rights.
They don't mind living in Israel.
No.
They don't, yeah. They just want to not be treated like second-class citizens.
Right. They want to have freedom of movement.
So
they want to have freedom
freedom
to go to school.
So they don't have freedom of movement. Palestinians living within Israel don't have freedom of movement.
Correct. In the West Bank and Gaza, correct.
And what about in Israel itself?
There are approximately 20% of Israeli citizens who are of Palestinian heritage.
In Israel,
right. Who have more freedoms than Palestinians without that, but they still have fewer freedoms than the Jews.
So in what
ways? Because they're not Jewish.
They aren't allowed to travel, perhaps?
I don't know more specifically what ways, but there are certain things they can and can't do.
Are they allowed to vote?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. But they want, they, I mean, they want and they deserve.
There's definite full discrimination.
Sure. Yeah.
There against Arabs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, with the world, I mean, really, the world turning on, you know, to view the Palestinian cause as the just cause. Where is this going to lead eventually? I mean, a core element of my philosophy is that hatred and injustice and war will never persist because they are aberrations of the natural order. They aren't the way the world works, and they happen, but then eventually we move beyond them. And one way we move beyond them is when the evil becomes so transparent and the response to it becomes louder, gets louder and louder. And I see that happening. Am I being overly optimistic?
No, it's just how many lives will we lose in the meantime?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and we've already lost,
who knows? Like my loved one in Gaza would say, injustice cannot go on forever.
Well, that's basically what I'm saying in a much more concise
injustice
manner.
Injustice cannot go on forever.
Yeah.
Justice will prevail. Palestine will be free, is what he says.
And what does that mean? What does Palestine will be free? Because that's
it just means they'll have freedom of they'll have equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean getting rid of the Jews.
Right.
Not at all. It never meant that. There were Jews there before.
And I think I mentioned to you that, and I think you probably read my blog about it. Maybe listen to the program where I talked about Kathy and I having lunch with a couple friends,
mm-hmm.
who I've known for 20 years, over 20 years. I didn't know they were Zionists, but they self-described Zionists. But the, their take is, I mean, to me, it looks like the Zionist take is that Israel has to be just for Jews.
That's their take.
Yeah.
That's racist.
Yeah, and it's a theocracy as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, theocracies tend not to work out real well. I mean, I don't know. Things aren't going real well in Afghanistan. I don't think things will go real well if the Christian radical right becomes the ruling theocracy in this country, as some would like to do. Certainly, Ireland under control of the Catholic Church wasn't a good thing. They moved beyond that. Is there hope that Israel might move beyond basically being a theocratic state?
I think Israel is self-destructing right now.
And
I think the only question is what's going to happen as it goes down. Will the U.S. go down with it because we have unconditional support, unshakable support for this Zionist entity? I mean, Zionism is the new Nazism.
And that's something that will rile up some people, but I think more and more people are seeing, what's happening to the Palestinian people is...
Even Holocaust survivors, Jewish Holocaust survivors say that, okay?
Yeah.
In 1940-something, would you have talked to a Nazi and tried to reason with them?
I might have, but right. I'm not sure that's necessarily productive.
It's not worth my time or my energy. My time and energy is better spent looking at Palestinians and bearing witness to them and doing what I can to help them.
Yeah.
I don't have time for Nazis or Zios.
And so what you can do to help them now is to continue your trips to Egypt?
Continue my trips to Egypt. I raise money. Because Palestinian refugees are not given visas, so everything's more difficult for them. You can't rent an apartment or whatever. So what I do is I raise money and I also match the funds with my savings and I give it to different Palestinian refugees in Cairo. Some of it gets sent directly to Gaza. And not just when I go to Cairo do I give money. I'm always trying to send money to either Gaza or Cairo, but it's always difficult to send money both places, especially Gaza.
I'll share that information with people in my blog this coming week. But it's important to do. I mean, again, with so many lives on the line, it's important to do whatever you can right now. But I want to look at the long term. You know, one thing that some Zionist and I would say rapidly pro-Israel people have pushed back against, including the Trump administration, is the expression "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free."
Oh my God, that was founded by the Likud party. in Israel. That's their slogan.
Right, I know. That's why it's remarkable to me that slogan is now...
And you know what they don't mean? They mean the Euphrates River. They mean Greater Israel, not just the Jordan River.
That's where the encroachment into Iraq comes that you were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
But so when Palestinians mean it, they refer to the Jordan.
Yeah, to the
And my impression is they're not referring to getting rid of Jews. They just want the equality.
They're getting rid of Zionism.
Yeah, they want to just be able to live freely and in equality in that
Jews
area.
Jews lived in Palestine throughout millennia.
Yeah.
And they were Arab Jews alongside Palestinians, alongside Arab Muslims and Arab Christians. Mm. You know? That's established. It's just Zionism is the enemy, not Judaism.
That's a really important distinction. I think that can't
be
said often enough.
And the fact that if I were a Jewish American, I would be so vocal because I would not want my religion hijacked by this. Hmm. Because the Zionist machine is trying to intertwine Zionism with Judaism. And there are some very strong, wonderful anti-Zionist Jews in this country and beyond who are speaking out about this, working tirelessly.
Mm. That's how I feel about Christianity being hijacked by a very radical fringe that see their interpretation of Scripture, of the Christian Scripture, as being, the only right one, and it dismisses all other... all other interpretations as invalid and even apostasies, and I resent that, and I think a lot of people who do have a more traditional take on Christianity would feel the same way. So what happens eventually? I mean, right now again we have the Zionist vision of, as you said, the original river to the sea was the Euphrates in Iraq to the Mediterranean Sea. The broadest vision of what a restored Zionist dream looks like takes land from another four or five countries, takes land from Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq.
Well, look at who they've been attacking. Look at who they've been attacking since the genocide started. It hasn't just been limited to Palestinian territories.
Lebanon,
Syria, Iran. Am I missing? I'm missing. There's more countries I'm missing. I just can't think right now.
Mm. But again, the global community, minus the U.S., has turned against this colonialism, this radical Zionist colonialism. And at some point, it's going to collapse, as all attempts to impose a foreign power, for a foreign power to impose its will on a people that it suppresses. I mean, sometimes it takes a long time for that to be beaten back. I mean, Ireland, 600 years, it took us a long time. We weren't very quick. Mm-hmm. to be clear, there was attempted genocide in Ireland as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's one reason the Irish are so supportive of the Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. And maybe one reason you mentioned... You mentioned the apartheid state that's been created in the West Bank, and maybe that's one reason South Africa is so supportive. They know what it's like to be on the receiving end of oppression and attempted genocide. Mm-hmm. So what does it look like when in the final straw we see peace in this region and we see freedom and we see equality for all people? What does that look like? I mean, are we going
to
get there?
I think we need to listen to Palestinians and then decide what it looks like after we listen to them. Yeah, I can't answer that. You can't answer that. Nobody in this country can answer that. It's up to the people who are living it.
And what do you hear from the Palestinian people you know? What do you hear from your family in terms of what they see that looking like?
They're just trying to survive.
Right now. Yeah.
They can't think that far ahead. Hmm. I ask if they eat. Hmm. And if they eat, I can eat then.
So you don't eat until they eat?
Most of the time.
So you're fasting a lot. Yeah.
Ever since my first trip to Gaza, I have shortened my showers because my shower is less than 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Very occasionally it's longer, but...
Well, thank you for showering before you come in.
No,
this
thank you. But no, I'm just saying everything I do in my life now, this Gaza has affected every decision I make, and I'm conscious of everything. Like I'm Muslim now.
Hmm.
After bearing witness to what Gaza and the people of Gaza, even after my first time, and I thought, I want that peace. Amongst bombs dropping on you, you're carrying your body parts of your dead family members, and you say, Alhamdulillah, I want to find that peace. Hmm. And accepting, taking my shahada is how I found peace. Hmm. So I focus on that.
Yeah. Well, I'll take
a, before I take a drink of water, I think of Gaza. I say Bismillah.
Hmm. Because water is, again, in very short supply in Gaza right now. Yeah. Being optimistic and having looked at history a lot myself, I guess I do see a point in time. I don't know when. Again, I know there will continue to be a lot of suffering, and I think the work you're doing right now is incredibly important and something we're all grateful for and need to support. But I think at some point I see right now, you know, what Israel has done to Gaza is so evil that the pushback is building momentum faster than I think that Benjamin Netanyahu probably imagined it would. And it will lead at some point to the kind of equality and justice that we envision. It may take a while longer to get there, but I think that'll happen. Last word?
Thanks for having me so much. Thank you for having me. Don't forget Palestine. Keep talking about Palestine. The electronicintifada.net is a wonderful resource. They have journalists on the ground in Gaza where they get, you know, a huge majority of their news and analysis. And it's wonderful. Check them out. And from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Thank you for joining us, Maria.
Thank you.
Maria Reves, folks. When we come back from a short break, as we always do with this program, we wrap it up with a farm and food conversation. That'll be me going solo today to talk about something that seems very trivial compared to Gaza, but ash trees. Ash trees are making a comeback. We'll talk about that when we come back from a short break on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Klipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Klipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so the Lonely Ash Grove, great song, and the Lovely Ash Tree, great tree, and decimated in recent years. I was interested to find out, though, that in England there is a comparable ash tree annihilation that's been going on, but not by the emerald ash borer, the little bug, kind of a pretty little bug, that's been decimating our ash trees. That's not England's problem. Their problem is a fungus, and I forget, or actually just refuse to learn the Latin name. but there's a complicatedly named fungus that's been devastating English ash trees. But their ash trees are evolving resistance to that fungus. So I was curious, well, okay, what's happening with the ash trees in this country? And again, the English ash borer, so the emerald ash borer, is not native to the U.S. It came here from China, like a whole bunch of invasive species that we really don't need here. But it came to North America, probably, you know, in shipping and all that. But first discovered in Detroit. And then the population just started spreading. And now it's pretty much everywhere. And there are 8 billion, or were 8 billion ash trees in the U.S. Every one of them is at risk. And here in Des Moines, you look around and nearly all the ash trees are gone. And it affects, you know, not just white ash, but green ash, black ash. And some of these are pretty important trees, especially if you're a baseball fan, because there are baseball bats made from ash wood. And I tell you this too, I know this from experience. In Ireland, the hurling sticks used in one of the two national games there, also made from ash trees. So, yeah, it's been pretty devastating. And they may be making a comeback. Some ash trees have been developing resistance, and I don't quite see what the resistance to the emerald ash borer is, because I mean, it's a bug. It's a bug that only decimates the ash tree. In conjunction with ash trees beginning to develop some resistance, scientists are working on breeding programs, trying to propagate those resistant traits in ash trees at large. And again, you know, that might help restore ash tree populations, but we'll see. It's what I really want to say about this is nature always fights back. You know, if something comes along and it decimates the population, whether it's a human population or a natural or a plant or an animal, yeah, sometimes they go extinct, but oftentimes they find a way to fight back. So y'all probably remember the Dutch elm disease. Maybe some of you aren't old enough to remember that, but Dutch elm disease has been pretty problematic in the U.S. Again, I think it came from Holland originally. Surprise, surprise. And it has mostly affected the American elm tree, which has been I remember seeing streets in New Brunswick, Canada, just in Moncton, I think, or St. John perhaps, lined with incredibly regal, pillar-like elm trees. And a lot of those, again, they fall victim to the Dutch elm disease. Apparently, though, again, there are some resistant traits, especially noticeable in the Siberian elm, the Chinese elm, which is also called the lace bark elm, that, you know, they're showing that those trees are going to bounce back. Beyond the ash tree, the most noticeable problem here is among oak trees with oak wilt. Oak wilt, again, that one might have been introduced. The best guess is from Mexico and Central America, maybe even South America. But again, it's been spreading through the Midwest and the mid-Atlantic states since probably, mid-40s or so? And the thing is, it's transmitted by roots. So you have two oak trees too close together, one gets oak wilt, the other one's likely to get it. There are inoculations. There are things you can do in terms of trying to wring the tree so that the roots don't get contaminated. But there are also oaks that are more inclined, red oaks, black, red, scarlet, pin oaks in particular, they're highly susceptible. White oaks are less so, including bur oaks. Bur oak is probably the most, you know, regal tree here in Iowa. I like the fact that nature has a way of fighting back. And I throw that out there not just as a comment about nature, but it's a comment about humanity as well. When things get tough, when things look bleak, we have a way of fighting back. Anyway, thanks to my guest today, Maria Reves, and to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music, We'll be back next week with another hour of Cutting Edge Talk Radio.
For at the bright noon.